Kings of the ages on the road to history. What we do now will always be with us. It's a chance to give new meaning to every move we make in the caverns and the caves where we come from.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Chris Payne, the co-writer and director of the new documentary feature film, Revenge of the Electric Car, a sequel to his 2006 award-winning feature documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? Thank you for joining us here today on Background Briefing. Are you there, Chris?
Oh, yes. Hi. Nice to be here.
And your film opens tomorrow night at the New Art in West Los Angeles. And your previous film, Who Killed the Electric Car, essentially shows in a very kind of personal and a tragic way. You almost feel like, you know, that the cars that they're killing have a kind of human dimension. When GM rounded up all of its successful EV1 cars and as many as 5,000 of them were destroyed, that's how the film ended. Now it looks like the same people who destroyed the electric car, at least in the case of General Motors, have joined with Nissan and Tesla Motors to embrace electric cars with a vengeance. What happened?
Well, you know, GM actually made about 1,000 of those cars, but electric cars were coming out from everybody. Toyota had them, Honda had them, Ford had them, and they all ganged up on California to, like, kill a regulation requiring car companies to put cleaner cars on the road. And in the process, most of those cars were destroyed. So it's really amazing to see the car companies, not just old cars companies, but Mercedes and everybody turning around and working on electric cars or bringing them all the way to market, as in the case of GM and Nissan and Tesla.
Well, I recall that from the earlier film, that, you know, you were sort of sneaking shots over the fence where they were pounded in a yard, in a pound, like stray dogs, you know, heading for euthanization. And the owners of these cars, particularly the EV1s, just loved the cars.
Well, yes, they sure did. We all did. I mean, I had one of those cars, too. And it wasn't just about a car, of course. It was about a symbol of getting off of this gasoline craziness that we've all been on for 100 years and moving on to other kinds of energy that are at least produced here in the States. And so I think both folks felt that kind of a vision for a future was kind of being destroyed prematurely. And indeed, that turned out to be what happened. Here we are, and looks like plug-in cars are coming back.
So walk us through some of clearly something's happened, and a lot of it's to do with public demand, clearly. But you've got the Volt, which GM have come out with. You've got the Nissan Leaf. And another character who, of course, you profile in the film is Tesla Motors, Elon Musk. And let's start with him, since he's the most entrepreneurial and not backed by these vast billion-dollar corporations that have been around for decades. How's he doing?
Well, Elon is a force of nature. You know, he took on the banking industry with PayPal and made a lot of money when he sold that to eBay, and then took on the space industry with SpaceX and saying, we've got to have a cheaper way to get into space than what Boeing has been doing for years, and finally the car industry. We started filming him about 3 or 4 years ago, I guess about 4 years ago, when the first Teslas were manufactured. And since then, you know, he's had an incredible adventure up and down and then back up again. And today they are no longer making the Tesla Roadsters, which we profile in the film, but they're getting ready to manufacture this Model S. I think it's coming out at the end of the next year, which instead of being a $100,000 car is going to be a $50,000 car. So I'd say they're moving forward pretty well.
And since you also profile Bob Lutz, GM's vice chairman, and Nissan's Carlos Ghosn, how much of this renaissance, this rebirth of the electric car, is to do with personalities? I mean, I recall some time back that a Ford Motor Company, when the grandson was running it, he apparently tried to get the Ford board to embrace hybrids when they were just first coming out. And he couldn't get the board to, and as you know, the U.S. car makers lagged behind Toyota in terms of hybrid. And eventually Ford actually had to buy the license for that hybrid drive from Toyota. So, there's a history in U.S. car manufacturing of head in the sand and extraordinarily kind of conservative resistance to change.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good assessment. And there are so many bad decisions made. GM really pioneered electric drives in the modern electric vehicle, which could be used in hybrids and stuff. And the guys that were making money for the car companies in the 90s were the car and SUV guys. I mean, the truck and SUV guys. So they didn't have any tolerance for super efficient engines or alternative drives. Now, they're all back because when gasoline hit $4 a gallon in 2008 and these guys had nothing to sell anybody, suddenly it's a mandate for change. And I think the most innovative companies, the strongest characters, were able to move quickest on it. That's why we chose who we did for this film.
And is this going to continue, though? I mean, do they recognize how inevitable that these changes are? I take it that the public is leading with their demand, aren't they? I mean, they're basically playing catch-up to the Japanese.
They're playing catch-up in a lot of ways. I think the public is like, I don't know if I can even afford to buy a new car right now, much less an electric vehicle, which is, out of the gate, a little bit more expensive. But because electricity prices at about $1 a gallon in equivalent cost, and historically, gas prices are going nowhere but up, and study after study shows that these cars are on the whole a lot cleaner, and it keeps the money right here in the U.S. instead of exporting it overseas, that electric cars are going to move into the market in a big way in the next 20 years. So I don't think there's going to be a rounding up and crushing of cars this time. It's now more about early adopters taking a risk and moving this thing forward.
I'm speaking with Chris Payne, the co-writer and director of the new documentary feature film, Revenge of the Electric Car, which opens tomorrow, Friday, at the New Art in West Los Angeles. It's a sequel to his 2006 award-winning feature documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? And when you mentioned a 120-mile range, what's the downtime after that, since you've been driving electric cars for 12 years? So I'm kind of picking your brains here on what it's like to own one. But what happens then? How quickly can you get it up and running again?
Well, if you drive to a friend's house that doesn't have a fast electric charger and you just plug into the wall in their living room or something with an extension cord or their garage, these cars take overnight to charge. This is a 120-volt circuit. It's what they call it, basically a trickle charge at that rate. Most people who get electric cars also will get a 220 circuit put in the garage or use public charging station that has one. And then those cars, if you're all the way at zero, will charge your car up in 4 to 6 hours, depending on what kind of battery system you have. So it's definitely a different kind of driving experience, and people are like, I'm not sure that's going to work for me. But the proof is that most people find that it's easier to do it at home than it is to go to a service station every time you have to get fuel.
Well, Chris Payne, I remember from your earlier film, though, that you got into questioning why it is that battery technology has not developed with all other technologies. And it truly is mystifying. And there are all these sort of apocryphal stories of how somebody came up with a carburetor that gave 100 miles per gallon, and General Motors or Ford grabbed the patent and buried it in the basement. Why is it that battery technology has been slow to catch up? Because that's all that matters. We wouldn't be having this discussion about range anxiety if batteries could increase their output by 2, 3, 4, or 10-fold.
Well, the car companies have been telling us for years, and I should say the oil industry as well, that electric cars will never be viable until you have, like, a miracle battery that can drive 300 miles on a charge and so forth. And, in fact, the new Tesla Model S will go 300 miles. The big advance on batteries has been lithium batteries. And when we made Who Killed the Electric Car, the most advanced battery at the time was a nickel metal hydride battery, which is the one that the Prius uses. And indeed, Cobasis, which is a part of Chevron, owned a patent for this. So many people felt like they were holding back the widespread implementation of this technology. So you can do the research on that and see what you think. But certainly now lithium batteries, thanks to laptop computers and cell phones and the much greater safety and range of lithium batteries in the last few years have made this new generation of cars possible. And I think people will be pleasantly surprised.
And is there a problem with disposal afterwards?
Not with lithium, or really not with any car batteries, because the materials in them are too valuable. For example, even if you have a lead acid battery, you take it down to Sears, you get your $10 back or whatever. With lithium batteries, the battery packs themselves are so valuable that you'd never want to get rid of them. In fact, they reuse them in hospital backup power supplies and things like this. So I don't think that will prove to be a problem.
And who controls the battery market? Is it the Chinese or the South Koreans? I mean, who?
The Chinese and the Koreans have a good lead on it because they were manufacturing so many of these computers for before we were doing it. But thanks to a bunch of grants and some terrific companies in the States, they're making more and more batteries here. Panasonic has a terrific factory in Japan as well. So I think you'll see battery technology coming from all over the place, and that's appropriate because you don't want to have just a single source.
So, and the way that they design these electric cars is the floor tends to be a big battery array. Is that how it works?
That's right, yeah. And they keep the center of gravity of the car very low. So car designers like this because suddenly they have a whole new frame to design a car around. And you'll see that, you know, cars like the Model S or some of the new electric cars coming out from BMW and stuff, a lot of them are taking a kind of a new approach to what a car could look like thanks to this to the battery design.
And the one that Elon Musk is coming up with, a sequel to his sports car, is that a family sedan? Or you say it's half the price, right?
Yeah, no, that's a family sedan for half the price of the sports car they had. And looks like a pretty terrific car. I went up to a factory tour. They had a press factory tour a couple weeks ago, and it's an impressive-looking car.
So, Chris Payne, you know, there's been a lot of criticism because I cover politics on my program largely, but I'm always interested in talking to filmmakers, particularly documentary filmmakers, because in many ways, you know, that's an extension of journalism because, you know, the resources aren't there anymore from newspapers and television to do investigative journalism. And quite often a lot of good stuff comes out via documentaries. So, but there have been a lot of criticism of you know, the stimulus package starting when the Obama administration came in, that it talked about shovel-ready jobs and didn't really go green and invest in new technology. So where, just since you've been studying this subject intensely now for some years, where do we stand in terms of any kind of investment, not on the scale of the putting a man on the moon or the Manhattan Project, but at least to get some sense of you know, whether it's obvious that these are going to be the cars of the future. And I'm just curious to know, you know, who's on the cutting edge and what's being done to push this forward, because clearly, you know, we all don't want to breathe this foul air anymore, and the solutions are there. They've been around for decades, as you pointed out in your earlier film. So give us an assessment of that.
Well, the government plays a huge role in this. And for a while there in the 90s, they were giving tax incentives to people buying 5,000-pound trucks. And this was obviously a mistake because that's what you get from the marketplace if you incent and reward those kinds of things. Now, the rebates, at least the Obama administration, have been to plug-in vehicles. And I think there's a $7,500 rebate if you buy one of these cars, which is a lot of money. Certain parts of the political spectrum are pushing back and saying, for example, that the Volt is the Obama car and Rush Limbaugh won't even drive one, and yet he thinks it's terrible and so forth. And, you know, the fact is that the automobile industry has paid back a lot of the money that was loaned to it in the bailouts, and the financial industry hasn't even come close to that. So I think these government incentives and programs are good. They are going to pick some failures along the way. But I don't think Tesla's going to be one. I think that's going to pay itself back very nicely, and I think Nissan and GM are probably going to prove to be wise investments as well.
So what's the word now on acceptance of the vault and any teething problems? Is you know, some people I know are thinking of buying them, but they'd rather wait for a year and see in case there's some problems. What's your assessment of it?
Well, I went ahead and traded my Prius in for it, and it's I've had the car for about 6 months. It was about $40,000 before tax, you know, credits and so forth, and I've been really impressed. I know that they haven't hit their sales numbers they wanted to yet, and I think this is very much what you call, a teething process. But they're figuring out how to sell it now. I think they dropped the price, and based on my experiences, I'm pretty impressed.
Well, I thank you for joining us here, Chris Payne.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show, and I hope you enjoy the film.
Indeed, and again, the film is The Revenge of the Electric Car, which is a sequel to Chris Payne's 2006 award-winning feature documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? Again, I've been speaking with Chris Payne, the co-writer and director of this new documentary feature film, Revenge of the Electric Car. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon, and this program's available at ianmasters.com. Sign up for podcasts, and you can also contact me. I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.